Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome. Come on in here. I'll give you a minute to sit down and get ready for an inspiring show today. I'd like to welcome you to the Celeste Stein Show. Here we explore topics that matter most to you when it comes to self-help topics and taking a deeper dive into particular issues that often don't get as much coverage or exposure in mainstream media. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and thank you so much for joining us. Please be sure to like, share, follow, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Celeste Stein Show, and bbsradio.com to stay updated and get notifications on all of our live and recorded episodes. If you would like to ask questions and call into today's show, please be sure to go grab a pen and paper. That number you should call is 888-627-6008 if you'd like to join in the conversation. I'm going to give you that number one more time. It's 888-627-6008. Now, today's topic is one that people aren't really talking that much about, but it also has to do with whether college still has the value it once did, or if people need to start looking into other areas. The question I'm hearing from a lot of potential college-bound high school students is whether to go to college or perhaps pick up a trade or specialized skill instead. To delve into this topic today of college or trade school, we will utilize the expertise of our special guest today. Her name is Larice Brown. Larice is a school-to-work transition expert and a thought leader whose articles and insights on communication and talent development have been featured in Business Insider, Inc. magazine, Chief Learning Officer, Fast Company, and the Huffington Post. She is also the author of the book, I Don't Have to Go to College: Discover Well-Paying Jobs That Don't Require a Four-Year College Degree, and a coach for higher achievers, those that are seeking more influence and appreciation on the job. Larice, welcome to the show. I am so glad that you could join us today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm looking forward. I have gotten a lot of feedback on my Facebook page and LinkedIn page, and a lot of people are really looking forward to our conversation today and just hearing more from you, if not for themselves, for their children who are trying to make some tough decisions in the months ahead as they prepare for college. So I wanted to start by asking you if you could tell me a little bit about your background and how you became an expert in school to work transitions.
The best way to start with that is my parents told me growing up two things. They were like, Larice, and my parents were born in 1951. That's important context because they're boomers and they were like, black boomers that were like, if you work hard, you can be successful in America. And then they said, Larice, they told me young, they were like, you have a lot of book smarts, baby girl, but you have no street smarts. So with those things, that frames everything I did, which was, okay, I believed if I did well in school academically, then I should be set up economically for life. And so, eighth grade valedictorian, went to boarding school in Middlebury, Connecticut, first Black student commencement speaker at Gettysburg College, where I graduated magna cum laude. And then I graduated and I was like, wait a minute. And then I understood what my parents were talking about when they were like, baby girl, you are so book smart, right? Like, 'cause academic intelligence is a specific intelligence, meaning like I could memorize things, I was comfortable rehearsing information. It didn't matter if I could apply it or not. I enjoyed reading and writing, right? And the kind of the discussion, but really understanding people and understanding how the world works, I had that naivety that just was like A plus B equals C. And it's like, no, there were some other things that I had learn through time that had to be shifted, and specifically that like education is a small piece of the puzzle today when it comes to you're going to be economically successful. I think all parents want their children to be to surpass them economically. That's a safety, right? Like you can fend for yourself. And I learned quickly that it was like, okay, well, yeah, education is one piece of it, but really, how many of us go to college and we think about this is the major I'm going to pick? And this major maps to these jobs, right? Like a great example of this in our community is criminal justice. You know, a lot of people that's like, well, what are you going to do with criminal justice? it's not like you're a forensic tech, which doesn't require a 4-year college degree, right? And at the same time, it's not really like you're headed towards law. So what does that map to? So again, we're not having those kinds of conversations. We're not having the kinds of conversations around internships that we need so that we cultivate those types of skills. And sometimes, even if you're a high achiever, right, or you're academically focused, we're not having networking conversations. You get jobs based on who you know. And so again, that piece of being like, wow, you will understand the books, but you really don't understand life was a driving factor in me realizing the most important skills that you need to say, okay, I am a student, but this is how I become talent. It's really understanding how to connect with people, understanding how to tell your story. And there's an economic factor of understanding where's the economy headed? Like, what is
Oh,
growing
yes.
or ways that are declining, right? Industries that are no longer in use, and even behaviors that
Right.
we that don't work anymore.
So important, so important. So that leads me to my next question, which is, what do you say to the young person and even their parents who might be struggling on making a decision right now as to whether it's better for them to go to a 4-year college or pick up a trade? Because we understand, that's a very individual decision for each person. So when they come to you and they say, we don't know, or the student is even, it was like not a question in my household. It was like, you're going to college. It wasn't even like we had an option. And
Right.
so we were strongly encouraged. That was just what you did. When you finished high school, you went to college. But now it's very, very different. And I'm even hearing from some folks that are very disappointed that got the 4-year degree, and they're like, I feel like I was promised a pipe dream, and now I can't even find a job. My field is kind of defunct, or you know what I'm saying? So what for right now, for those who can, I guess, well, anybody can get help at any time, I guess, along the journey. But what are you saying to those parents and those students?
I'd start with how mature is your child? And by mature, I know that's one of those words where it's like it could mean different things to different people. But the biggest shift I'm hearing from people when it comes to post-COVID and students going to college and not finishing coming home is there's how comfortable are they speaking up? Hey, I don't know how to do this. Are they going to sit there? And rightfully so, because I don't have the language, I don't know what to say. Talking to that teacher makes me uncomfortable. Talking to that dean makes me uncomfortable. Like, do they have the ability when they need help to go seek it? Or are they at a point now where they're still looking for you to have support with them with that? The other piece of that is, does your child, when I say maturity, are they at the space where they're self-motivated around what they want to do? Because if you don't know what you want to do, I tell you, college, a 4-year college is not a space. It's not, most of them are not designed for the kind of career exploration that people need to say, oh, I like that. It's academic learning, right? It's not hands-on. So again, how well can you speak up for yourself? Do you know what you want to do? And also, really, can you afford it? And again, this is the one of those formulas where I tell people, it's not even like when I went to school, it's just like you go to college, you sign on some loans, and like you just assume you're going to get it back. That thinking doesn't work today because now what you're hearing people say is like, what, like we can't afford, like all the problem,
I'm
we can't afford
telling
children, right? We can't afford a starter home, like ratio. And don't know where the benefit of a 4-year college degree kicks in is about 20 years into your career anyway. So we all, and it's something powerful about expectations, right? Like we're like, okay, I'm going to go to college. And once I graduate, boom, like, especially if we come from families and we're ambitious, but they're low income, or we feel like our parents didn't go to college and it was an important path forward so that we could do better for ourselves and those we love. But then we graduate and we're like, wait a minute, this didn't change my trajectory the way I thought. Or wait a minute, I'm not even able to get in the rooms or get interviews for some of these jobs in my field or major. So that's what I would say. I would say, ask, again, can your child speak up for themselves, or are they still reliant on you to fill those gaps for them, especially when they don't know what to do? The second piece is, does your child have clarity around what they want to do? And then three, if you've saved up for the 4 years, or you can afford the 4 years for them to do some non-career exploration, but again, still some social activities, which I don't poo-poo, right? Something like college is sure, right? Like, but that doesn't have to be a bad thing. If can you afford it? And can you afford, and by that I mean, can you afford for it not to pay off immediately?
Right.
And
That
when
social part is really important too. I mean, some people are like, well, I didn't pay for you to, join the fraternity or the sorority. I didn't pay for you to, well, maybe they did, but I didn't, I want you there into academia and learning. But the thing is, a lot of times, I know for me personally, a lot of the jobs that I got was because I knew someone, not necessarily, with the skills. So, because a lot of people have the same skills. Well, what sets you apart, from someone else? So important. But, I think if I think back, I spent many years teaching college classes, five different universities. And when I, would do counseling with students, I can remember so many of them coming to me with not a clue. They were in my major, into communications and journalism and broadcasting and all of that, but they actually really didn't know what area. I mean, and there's so many different places you can go with that particular degree. And some of them would make the decision to do other things, but I'm like, well, then what, I mean, why are you here? What is it that you are actually, thinking you want to do when you get out of here? And I mean, it would just be this blank stare many times. And you're like, well, how can I help this student to kind of find where they're trying to go? And so sometimes it's internships, sometimes it's, conversations about things, because I find many of them don't even know what particular fields exist within that particular area. And so, like, I can think in terms of communication. So I spent many years as a news reporter. And so many times when people watch television or they listen to the radio, they think, oh, that's what I want to do. I want to be on camera, not realizing there are like 100 other jobs supporting that one position to be on the air, from your engineers to your directors to your assignments editors and producers. There's so many people that go into that. So some of it is also exposure. And that's where, again, networking comes into play, because you may be able to do a job shadow or go somewhere to learn more about the particular area and then make a better informed decision about what you need to learn to be competent in your field, right? So I wanted to rattle off a few statistics. I found some information. According to the National Student Clearinghouse, in April of 2023, while almost every sector of higher education are seeing fewer students enrolling for classes, many trade school programs are booming. And in fact, mechanic and repair trade programs saw an enrollment increase of 11.5% from the spring of 2021 to 2022. Enrollment in construction trades courses increased by 19.3%, while culinary program enrollment increased 12.7%, according to the Clearinghouse. Meanwhile, enrollment at public two-year colleges declined 7.8%, and enrollment at public four-year institutions dropped by 3.4%. Now, so can you break it down for me and for our audience here in terms of why we might be starting to see this shift going from college to people selecting trades instead of college, and what are some of the key factors?
So first, let's start with the internet, right? This is the internet generation. So when they get online, they are, I wouldn't say bombarded, but they are given, they see entrepreneurs and they see a lifestyle, and these people say college is a scam, right? Meaning like you're going to go to school for 4 years. There's no guarantees you're not going to learn any applied skills, right? Like you're going to spend a lot of money and you're not going to get a return. So that's, sorry, I paused there. Excuse me. That's important to note because, I just want to quickly reference what you said before. People, when you were a reporter, people saw you in the front, but they didn't see what's around you, right? It's like people can't be what they can't see. So one piece of it that I'm talking about when I reference that is like they're seeing these people with a lifestyle and they're like, okay, that seems like these people are saying college is a scam. I could see that because if you ask, when I teach students, the first thing I say is, how many of you all know someone who went to college And then they came back and they're working at Subway or they're working at a sneaker store or they're working, and students see that. So they also have evidence around them in the data. Yeah, my friend went to college 4 years. Now they're working at a high school job. Now they're flipping burgers. So I mentioned that the potency of that visual, whether it's fair or not, that college is not working. Whatever, my parents are telling me this is a guarantee, not that what I'm seeing around me, and honestly, not with some people who have a lifestyle I like are saying on the internet. So that's a key piece of where you're seeing the shift around culturally, like a lifestyle this generation is more comfortable with. Well, I don't have to go to college and I shouldn't have to feel shamed if I don't go to college, because
Right.
that's one factor of it. The other piece that you're seeing is that in general, there's a war for 18-year-olds. People are having fewer children. It peaked, I think the peak even enrollment, we saw a peak, I think, in of enrollment in 2010, meaning like where people had the most 18 year, like the children of the boomers and Gen Xers, like had the children. Now, again, people are having fewer children. And so therefore you're going to see enrollment overall decline from previous numbers. There's just not enough 18-year-olds. That's why you're also seeing people go after older people or people who would have some college and didn't finish. So I want to put that in context. But this way you're seeing the decline in enrollment around 4 year versus 2 year has to do with not only what we talked about on the internet, but also the recognition of when you the top two reasons people aren't going to college are because they have to stay and help their families. And two, and then they can't afford it, right? And that's overlooked. Meaning, if you have to stay and help your family, if your family's in a tight spot, how are you going to do 4 years away? You're looking, trade schools are more immediate. There's a quicker path to money. Whether you go through a trade school that has like more apprenticeship, if you do HVAC or something like that, or even just the programs, those programs can be 6 months to a year. My brother transitioned into welding, it was a year. So, under the context of like, if you need money, you're gonna go spend 4 years and then go get some money, or you're gonna do a year and get some money? And also to that big picture, which is again, colleges are up against their own narrative of, well, if you go to college, you're gonna make more money. And these students are like, no, you can't sell me that blindly. And so that's where you're also seeing that conversation shift for students. I think parents still are taking a little bit longer to get there. So I'm glad that a lot of parents are asking these questions, but students, at least, if it's up to them, they are more willing to say, listen, I know that a 4-year college isn't a guaranteed path to success for me. But that's to speak to some of the statistics, right? There is a lifestyle factor. We don't have to go to a 4-year. There's a recognition of where can I make quicker money, especially if I'm not considering the 4-year, or if my family, needs help.
One thing, I wanted to know if you have, those parents that really they have their heart set on the child going to college. I know I was extremely devastated when my daughter told me she did not want to go to my alma mater, Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. I was devastated, but at the same time, what do you say to those parents? See, it's not just about the young folks. It's about their parents too, because they can put a lot of pressure. Hey, you need to do this, but what do they say to thine own self? Be true. What do you say to them? Hey, I often couldn't talk to the parents who might have questions, because of FERPA, the laws and everything. You can't tell. It's like your child's an adult. They're actually, a young person that's making able-bodied and able to make decisions on their own. But have you had to have that tough conversation with the parent?
I have, and originally when I wrote the book, I Don't Have to Go to College, it was geared towards parents. And I did a test run trying to run workshops, which I should have known anyway, because anybody who tries to rev up a PTA will tell you it's challenging to reach parents.
Oh,
But
yeah.
they weren't receptive. And understandably, listen, I come from parents who are like, you're gonna go to college. Okay, so I got it. But also we're up against, when parents were participating in the economy, when they were transitioning out of high school and college, it was a different time. And so, as telling people, hey, it's a different time now, that doesn't work, right? Like, it's the same thing with music. Like, I remember growing up, like, my mom would be like, this is music today. And for us, we were like, yeah, this is music today. Like, this is like essentially what the parents take for granted that things have changed. And so they're passing on information saying, listen, this worked during my time without a recognition that like things are always changing, right? Like just like the music changed, what people do after high school to be successful has changed. And so I found the parent conversations to be the most challenging because it's emotional. And again, this is not to say like a economic argument versus like use your logic. You know, people try to like shut down. No, we are beings who feel, and it's some of the trickiest emotions that you're talking about. It's I feel shamed if my child, who, how are people going to look at me if my child doesn't finish school? It's also, I don't want my child to be a statistic. We do discriminate against people who don't go to 4-year colleges. We judge them unfavorably, right? That's why a lot of people are like, you'll hear even some students that are like, I want to be a contributing citizen. I have to go to college. And I'm like, that's very powerful that we've made a connection that the only people who are true contributing citizens are the ones who went to college, right? It shows you how unaware people are of other options. But all that to say, when I talk to parents, I have to see how open they are. And usually the most open ones are the ones similar to what you said before, who have students who are like, who have children who are like, college is not for me. Or even a nephew that was like, I really don't want to go to college. Because then they see, oh, this is real. And you can't force someone, again, if they don't have that self-motivation at the point to do it. Those are the parents who are most receptive to, here's other pathways my child can take, or that my loved one can take so that they can be successful. But in general, if you're a parent listening to this, which I hope you are, tell your friends to be more open-minded. I'll say that.
I know. I just think back to when I was teaching, and I made some observations. I know some of the best students were the non-traditional that maybe took a few years to work, and they came back. They were a lot more dedicated, and they specifically knew what they were trying to gain from college, which, and one guy even told me, he said, college is too expensive. He said, I've decided that I am going to work, raise enough money for the classes I wish to take. And if I can't pay for those classes, I'm not taking the classes, And that's, I was like, wow, a lot of people don't think like that. They just think, they don't even have a concept of how much, their parents might be paying, or that what they're going to have to pay back that $80,000 per semester a day nowadays. I'm like, you don't know. That's your house, your car, all these things that you will be paying on for years. It took me about 10 years. And I, at that point, I just had a master's degree, but it took me 10 years to pay off college and, my advanced degree. And, it's very, very expensive. So, I want to
Spot
take a
on.
quick, yeah, exactly. I want to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about some common misconceptions about trade schools versus, the 2 or 4 year college degrees. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Looking to amplify your brand's voice? Look no further than Bishop Stein and Associates, your premier PR powerhouse. From targeted advertising to innovative marketing solutions, we're here to elevate your brand. But wait, there's more. Are you a strong speaker? Join our exclusive speakers bureau and share your expertise with the world, or book our top-tier talent for your event. Whether you're launching a product, rebranding, or seeking expert speakers, Bishop Stein and Associates delivers results. Transform your brand today. Visit us at bsaprinc.com and discover how we can amplify your success today. Bishop Stein and Associates, your strategic move.
And welcome back. We are here today talking with Larice Brown. And Larice, we were just getting ready to delve into some of the common misconceptions about trade schools, versus traditional 4-year colleges. What are some of the things that you think people don't have a good take on?
People think trades are the dirty jobs. And so immediately that brings up this connotation of like, okay, if you're a trade, then maybe you're working sanitation, or like maybe you're welding, but maybe, instead of thinking like, hey, actually, there's a lot of innovation happening within trades. So people don't often think of aviation mechanic is a trade. the
That's
people who
right.
planes. Again, just to get away from the connotation of dirty jobs, right? And also recognizing that in addition to trade schools, we're also talking about things that require certifications or apprenticeships, right? It's not it's
Right.
expanding that understanding that saying, listen, really, trades are skilled jobs. It's called skilled trades, right? It's the idea that you have to practice something hands-on. So the first misconception is like, it's not about the dirty job. It's really a recognition of you have to do the skill in order to be able to do the job. And that's distinctly different from four-year colleges where you're going to talk, you're going to discuss, you're going to write papers, you're going to verbalize. But really, the second week into a trade school or program, you are learning the specific skills you need for the job. So that's the first misconception. And it's not always a dirty job. The other piece of it that people should know when it comes to trade schools is also think about, now you do have to be, I will say this about FAFSA, some FAFSAs, you do want to be clear that they transfer over to trade schools. But I would also say the thing about trade schools is they understand that you're there to be employed more so than colleges. Four-year colleges are still doing that catch up. And I would say one advantage that is associated with trade schools, some of which are embedded in community colleges, they offer these trade force or work force certifications, is that there's a more robust focus on here's some of our industry partners. Here are people you should be talking to. Here are companies in the area who's hiring. And that's a distinct advantage because we're all going to school because we need to become talent and get jobs. And so those are two things to keep in mind. Hands-on learning and also more of a focus on career development.
Yes. One of the things that I think too, we haven't touched on so much is the reason people think about that. You did say, people are like, hey, I 4 years from now. And so I think people often wonder, well, can I get a well-paying job, and how would you actually define a well-paying job that doesn't require a four-year college degree? So what are some of the types of jobs? I know you've alluded to a few of them, but can you tell me like some of the top jobs that people might be going for that mainly require a trade or special skill?
Absolutely. So some of the immediate ones with trades we think of course, are welders and HVAC technicians. And again, when I say HVAC, you all, this is powerful too. These are people who focus on refrigeration. So everything from when you go to get your cold soda from that machine, right? If it's warm or syrupy, they need to fix that. But also the people who set up the refrigeration that keeps large computer systems warm, I mean, cool, right? Like they set it up so that the air blows, because you imagine, I mean, our iPhones stop when they get too hot. So imagine people who collect a lot of data, or these organizations that put a lot on the cloud. HVAC people work with them as well. So that's just a visual. So there's trades. The other aspect is healthcare. Healthcare is booming because we have a lot of boomers who are aging. And so in addition, we think of healthcare, we think of doctors, but there's a surgical tech. That's not a job that requires a four-year college degree. Or even the people who do the radiation tech. That doesn't require 4 years of college. The people who also do the scans, right? Physical therapists don't require a 4 year college degree. So giving people an understanding that healthcare, which is booming and growing, these are jobs that do not require a 4 year college degree, and they're not trades, and they're not trades. Another piece is cybersecurity or IT. We rely on data. This is a key piece of even what's driving AI and the automation of some industries. But these jobs don't require a 4 year college degree, especially cybersecurity. This is growing, it's in demand. I don't know how many people experienced the CrowdStrike, the blue screen, but that's
Right.
cybersecurity, right? We need people who understand how to data breaches, how to prevent people from being scammed. So when that whole Cash App scam thing was going on, I'm sure you saw somebody that this is cybersecurity, right? This is the fact that somebody can call you and pretend to be your bank. And so again, these are jobs that are well paying. And when I work with students, I encourage them to think of well paying simply supply and demand. Like when you look at where the world is headed, and you will see, whoa, there's a big demand there. And you'll realize when these jobs, because these jobs don't require a 4 year college degree, people aren't aware of them. So the supply is often lower. And so I'm glad we're having this conversation. Even in the last one, I would note is graphics, people who are creative. So video game designer, even being an interior
Mm-hmm.
designer, right? You can go to a community college and get some insights on architecture and business, and that'll also lead to you being able to do that if that's the creative outlet you want. But I often think people, again, they just don't, they're not conscious that there's a lot of well-paying jobs that don't require a four-year college degree. Well-paying meaning these industries are growing and they don't have enough people who know about them. So you will be paid well and continue to be paid well the more you specialize in that area and skill.
Well, Larissa, and speaking of the future, as you mentioned, I also wanted to ask you a little bit about AI and how you think that's going to impact trades, four-year colleges, two-year degrees, et cetera, in the next couple of years. What are you kind of seeing as a trend?
AI is, so as a trainer, I want everybody, because we hear AI and it's like, it's used so vague. And I'm always like,
Right.
everybody, can you please talk about AI for the everyman? Like, can you talk it for the, for talking about the AI
Right.
is trained. So it's like, you go on Google. Oh, you're searching for this. Okay, so I know this is important to you. It's trained based on what we're already doing. So the most common example of AI, people will talk about ChatGPT, right? Which is like, as people type in things, it's learning different styles of writing, and it's also giving you information in different styles. There's a lot you can do there. But again, remember, it's trained by people. But the core of AI, what it's going to take out is anything that can be automated, meaning like there's a repetition to it, there's not a human element that's required. They're the first to go. And those are actually the four-year college degree, this historically four-year college degree industries. And this is also why those who are graduating four-year colleges are doing some, they are less likely to be employed than the average worker at time. This is the first time that has happened, I think, since the 90s. And so let's go through those industries, right? So when you consider publishing, well, guess what? That can be automated now. You can collect some data, right? You can put it in ChatGPT. Somebody can boom out a manuscript and have it edited, or Grammarly, right? That can be edited. The other piece of it is even in financial services. This is about large data collection or even intake, right? I don't need to hire you to intake that information. I can have that set up for that person. That person can shoot it out to me and make recommendations for you, right, through a bot. So I don't even have to talk to somebody in that case. So the other area, so even in consulting, right, a lot of these industries that the graduates want to go in, especially again, technology, it's about ChatGPT. It can code. What do we need you to code for? So the industries that are most immediately hit, and we're seeing this because the headcount has been permanently reduced. And when I say that, it's another way of saying like they're not growing again. I think anecdotally, that story of Tyler Perry, they showed this AI machine that you put in some information and it creates the visuals for you, and it also can write the story for you. Even entertainment is up against the fact that we can make AI videos, right? Like we can, you know. So I say these traditional industries, entertainment, finance, even law. A lot of law is like, where do you get the case law from? And then like read the contract. I don't need to pay somebody to read the contract for $200 an hour if ChatGPT can scan it and tell me what's the most important piece or tell me what case law I should focus on. I'm not gonna pay
Well,
you.
that's so interesting. I was talking to my brother last week. He's a dentist in Washington, D.C., and his office has adopted some new AI technology. And he said, this stuff is so cool. He said before, they would have to kind of look at an X-ray and read it and say, well, it looks like you have a cavity here or whatever. Well, now the AI takes that same picture and compares it to umpteen other documents and looks at, previous x-rays and everything else. It can tell you the percentage of decay. And I mean, just amazing stuff and exactly what needs to be done. So I'm like, well, you know what's happening next here? It's going to be a robot that can probably do the surgery. And you can press the button as to what needs to be done. But AI pretty much could diagnose the issue. Take all of this machine learning in terms of how to do the, or can be programmed to do, the cavity or whatever it's going to be. And soon, even very skilled positions like that will be replaced, possibly by AI. It will certainly, it helps in many ways, but it'll certainly change the way things are being done. And it will probably allow more patients to be seen because not as much time will have to be spent analyzing and determining things like that. And I will say, Yeah, another thing with my field, I mean, television has been using AI for quite some time. I know when I started in television many moons ago, there would be, a studio, and usually there would be three to four cameras. One would be above, that may take a picture of the whole studio. And then when you're on camera, there are three cameras, usually a camera one, a camera two in the middle, and a camera three. So one on the right, one on the left, and one on the middle. And so, that's why sometimes you may see people, they're supposed to be on camera two and they're looking at camera three, that crazy stuff that happens sometimes when you're on the air. But I know that there used to be three people, three camera operators, generally when I would be anchoring and stuff like that in the studio, and there would be a floor director, so four positions. Well, now the last time I went into one of the stations in Nashville where I used to work, I was like, this is crazy. They were all robotic cameras on the floor. And so I was kind of back in the back, and there was a guy who basically, programs and, making sure that whatever the shot's supposed to be, the producers and the directors are looking, the director especially is looking at what camera is supposed to be from what angle. They kind of put all that on the scripts and program that in. Well, there was one person instead of four now taking charge of what was going on. And the only time I saw him really have to do anything was, and this was when they first started using the cameras, but was one of the cameras was a little bit blurry, so he got direction from the director to change the focus on the shot. So he switched to manual and was adjusting a manual shot. And I was like, man, so you now only have to pay one person. And that's going to happen more and more. For my PhD, I was studying AI and things like augmented reality and how it's all going to impact us going forward. And some of the things that they're already using in other countries, like when you talk about the travel industry or even in hospitals. I was watching some video of it was like in a nursing home. The robots, each one costs about $6,000, and the robots would they replace like all they had a nursing shortage anyway, but they replaced all of them with the robots, and they would come in and tell them what time to take their medication. It would play games with the people, have them up exercising. It could lift. There are a lot of injuries in the healthcare field from lifting and things like that. So I think it's going to completely transform the world
Absolutely.
as we know it today. And I'm not talking a long time. I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we're just going to be like, oh my God, oh my God. The only thing I really worry about is, who is okay, we talk about artificial intelligence learns from people, like you said earlier. And so, who is actually doing the teaching? So, you really need to have a diverse group of people working with the AI and feeding the AI information so that they're, I mean, if that's being used to like select people for jobs and things like that, as you can might imagine, there are going to be some issues with that,
Oh,
but.
absolutely. It's the same thing when they talked about that facial recognition
Recognition.
technology from the police force, like when they couldn't discern between black people, right? Like we have to be, there's a spiritually they say anything that is, how they say we're children of God and we have the same ability to create the way God created the heavens and the earth. And so it's the same thing I tell people, like there's nothing that is created that is not impacted by the creator. So the same thing, like we're created by God, so we are impacted by the way God created us. When we create something on this earth, whether a technology or a book, it comes from our minds. It comes from our thinking. And every different people from different groups think differently. So to your point, absolutely, every group has a bias or something they're not exposed to. When you take that to technology and it comes up against something it hasn't been exposed to, then what happens? Right. And it can have catastrophic consequences if we're not aware of that. Absolutely. And to the point, I love what you said about that four person became one. And the reason why that he has the job is because He knows how to work. He has the skill to program those cameras to work with it. And that's where people who are going into skilled trades is, yes, something can diagnose and still you're going to be the one that fixes it. Or yes,
Right.
you're going to work with the laser machine, right? You're going to guide it, but you still need to understand what you're training that machine for. So you're right, there a reduction in headcount will still happen, but trades is often about that skill. They're teaming. That's how I see it. Skilled trades are more teaming with AI and the machines. And on our end, for people who went to for on the end of people who went to four-year college, those traditional industries that heavily relied on data collection or writing or intake, like you said, those things are going to be permanently eliminated because once the machine can do it, what do we need you for?
Right. Well, I think, one thing that's really good is, I love being a creative because, see, that's where it's all emanating from, the mind. You're thinking of things. That's one thing right now AI can't do. It has to get that from us because we have unique lived experiences, right? Where we've actually learned, but after a while, they're worried it may catch up, right? And be able to rewrite programs. I guess that was like in the iRobot movie where it can be a little bit awry, but we want to make sure that certainly we're thinking ahead on all of those things because there is so much going on and so taking place so rapidly that there are no laws on the books yet for a lot of this stuff that's being done. And that part was rather worrisome to me in studying some of it because what we may approve here or not approve of here, another country may have already approved of. So how do we deal with that from a global perspective, international perspective, versus, just the day-to-day in making sure that things may seem good because it cuts down on time or, it's better in some way, but is it ethical? Is it moral? And sometimes people don't really care, it's going to make money. So that's all the objective. But we have to, as a society, I think, be thinking of all of these things when it comes to what we're learning and how we're learning and what we're doing. I want to take another quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want you to be thinking of some success stories you've had with individuals who maybe chose trade school over college. So we'll take a break and we'll be back right after this message.
Looking to amplify your brand's voice? Look no further than Bishop Stein and Associates, your premier PR powerhouse. From targeted advertising to innovative marketing solutions, we're here to elevate your brand. But wait, there's more. Are you a strong speaker? Join our exclusive speakers bureau and share your expertise with the world or book our top-tier talent for your event. Whether you're launching a product, rebranding, or seeking expert speakers, Bishop Stein and Associates delivers results. Transform your brand today. Visit us at bsaprinc.com and discover how we can amplify your success today. Bishop Stein and Associates, your strategic move.
And by the way, that's our first AI commercial.
I was going to say that. That's good. I was looking, oh, I like this.
So a little different, trying some new things. So anybody out there, if you are looking for an AI commercial, see us. Contact bsaprinc.com, right?
I wanted to note this, and I know we're transitioning into success stories, but one of the reasons that talking about AI and its immediate consequences is important, that aligns with why people not going to a four-year college if they can't afford it is important, is because AI will permanently put some people in an underclass. And so what do I mean by that, right? Because this is why you all, like where I get booted out of education, they were like, Miss, you're talking about like labor and economy. I'm like, yes, we go to school to get a job, right? But K through 12 is not ready for that. But I need us to understand that like in the 70s, there used to be this idea that you're going to do better than your parents. That stopped in the 70s. That doesn't mean, oh man, everybody is going to like do worse than their parents or be on equal footing. No, it means if you are going to advance, if you're going to be economically mobile, you have to be more intentional, which means you have to have an understanding of the economy, not just this. You can't follow general platitudes, Right? Like before, it was just work hard, and that was the platitude, and like you would be fine, right? Because it was more about workers' rights and pensions and health cares and how do we help all ships rise. We are no longer like that. And so what's happening is stratification across race, and of course there's still gender stratification, meaning like certain people, there's just gaps that we are not going to see filled in our lifetime. It is always unfortunate to me when people say 288 years it's going to take. I'm like, dear God, we want to see some progress in our lifetime, right? But it's important to note that part of the what's challenging even about four-year colleges now is they are reproducing inequity because it benefits the wealthy. The wealthy already, they've been saving for college for their children. That's part of their tax plan, right? They're saved for. So their children are going free. Coupled with that, when you are wealthy, you tend to have networks of other people who can hire your students. So your child. So even that, right, they already are integrated into networks or have hiring managers. But to take this back to AI, what that means is that right now, AI is about getting access to certain industries that the average person, meaning like who's training them now? Where do you get information about? Are you in the financial services sector? They're training somebody, but how many of us are represented in that sector? Okay, so you were looking in the entertainment industry. Like you said, how many of us are looking at the entertainment industry from the perspective of, let me get trained in the how they're going to use the cameras or how they're going to use AI to generate that. So what I mean is it'll create this permanent underclass because the people who will most benefit from getting the skills to learn how to use AI and then permanently have a job in the future are already the people who tend to be in a higher socioeconomic class anyway. So that's what I mean by that, which means that there are going to be conversations in you about not only ethics, but like what do you do when they're when the retail jobs or jobs that tend to be lower wage jobs across retail or other areas, well, they're gone now because we all have walked into a place where you order on a machine. And so that is something I just want to note for all. It's just to pay attention to the world around you. And if, you know, if it's interesting to you, then yes, pursue it. But it is important to note that like AI, as you mentioned, will have some significant impacts on the economy and how we all participate in it.
Yeah, just wow, such interesting food for thought. I mean, these are things that we should really all be paying attention to and looking into and talking to our children about, because even people in academia, one of the things that I found even in doing some of the research I was doing, it was that we were like kind of hamsters on a hamster wheel, especially in the field of communications, because just think about what has happened in the last 30 years. It has just been crazy with the internet. If you think back to 30 years ago when we barely had, cell phones, those big old clunky cell phones, you had to carry in a box and all that. Now they're so small they can be on a watch, a little tiny device on your hand or whatever. So all this is happening, and it's happening so quickly that the people teaching it, they may have been teaching for 30 years plus, right? And so there's little time to update those skills sometimes. So the students are coming in having used computers and phones and internet and everything else from the time they were born. I can remember my son coming in at two, turning on my Mac, I mean, it's just part of their life. It's part of who they are. And so sometimes, that's where this whole college question, how do you make sure that the skills are being updated on the faculty side? Because that's a small little secret. A lot of people aren't talking about, but definitely one that I think we got to really get ahead of that game, because a lot of people don't like change.
That's
Who my cheese? It's still a problem. People don't want to talk about, what do I need to improve? It's just, they get complacent. They get comfortable being where they are. And I think, we really have to constantly be evolving, constantly be open to change and learning, because it's getting ready to go down. It's going down quickly. So I hope that people are ready.
Yes. And the last thing I'll add, because that's a great point. The permanent, any change, If you're not somebody who's adaptable at this time, that's how you will become a part of a permanent underclass, because there's so many people changing, and there's so many people also competing for the same jobs. They found that people who are not only are people retiring later, but like 60-year-olds are getting back in the workforce, right? If they had left, people are getting back. So it's a lot of competition in certain areas, and it's just a recognition, like you said, stay with the times, right? Like stay
Yeah.
with where things are going.
That reminds me, I've heard from so many young people because I have, children that are working age now, and it's like, well, your generation doesn't want to get out of the jobs we want and we need. I'm like, look, we better get a new skill. But
Right.
anyway, it's like really bad that this attitude. I think we as a whole, as a society, we're going to need all the help we can get from every different area. That's
Yes.
something else I learned from my research, that how important it's going to be for them to have some of the knowledge and skill sets from older generations, because I'm telling you, sometimes things happen where there's a meltdown, and there are going to be people who are like, "What do I do? I don't know how to use a typewriter. I don't know how to take a note." Like, it's going to be a mess, if something like that happens. So we don't even want to talk about
No,
that,
no. And even without those tech pieces, or like those being able to do things in we'll say a previous way, not a primitive way, you all have social skills in a way this generation knows they lack. Not only because, like you said, they grow up with technology, so it's like, if I don't want to see you, I don't have to see you. I'm engaging with you through my tablet, but we don't engage out in the world the same way, right? Like sometimes, of course, there's some distrust because, stranger danger, but really we don't participate in groups the way we used to socially, whether it's religious groups or even students being lifeguards, or like we don't do that. And so you all have a maturation and it we can learn from the way you all engage with each other, the way you resolve conflict, the way you introduce yourself to someone, the way you look them in the eye. These are skills that this generation, you all take for granted. You all had to do it this way, and they still don't have that, right? There's a discomfort or anxiousness around people. So we'll look to you all for that too.
Yeah, I think it's so important for both sides there to pay attention to the good things that are brought to the table by both sides,
Yes.
because so much can be gleaned from that. And how important is that, just to have the balance that is needed. But I think that, and I look at a lot of folks, especially younger generations, that I love some of the things I love about them is that they really do push for true work-life balance. I was
Yes.
like, I grew up, there was no work-life balance. It's like you go to work and you stay till you get the job done. I mean, it was not good in that sense. And so they really take the time to make sure their mental health is in check. If something doesn't feel right, they say something, and I think that's really important, because some people, it's like, well, I just grew up at a different time, and it was a different way of doing and looking at things. But see, by having AI and access to some of these tools, we'll be able to do things better, quicker,
Yes.
etc. So maybe you have more time for the good things in life and enjoying, your family, your children, and so forth.
Absolutely.
We almost are out of time. I wanted to ask if you had a success story that you'd like to share of somebody who made that decision to go to trade school, over college, and kind of what helped them in their journey to make that decision, and how it ended up.
Yeah, I'll share one. My brother, I remember I was writing the book. He was at a point where he had a job at FedEx under a contractor for I think about 10 years. And the cost of living, it was in North Carolina, and the cost of living had ex increased significantly. And we were like, you need to get a skill. And so he went back to school, and again, he was under time constraints. He has a family, and it was like, what's the shortest path to where you can get a raise to a better job? And he went into welding, which is big in Fayetteville, North Carolina. But I would say that that resulted in that change alone. He went from, I think, a job that was about $15 to $22 an hour, which is a significant skill jump. So that's one example, right? That's an example of when someone's older and they're looking for that path. Another example is I had a student who was an intern. She was one of my interns, and I noticed she struggled with writing. Anytime I would give her an assignment about writing, I would be she really she just was not able to do it. And I said, and English was her second language. It is her second language. Her primary language at home is Spanish. And I told her, in New York, the community college system is big, so they automatically, it's not like they automatically think, oh, I have to go to a 4-year. And I said, have you explored being a Spanish translator for a business? Like instead of doing the, like because of course there's a writing competency you need to do, but you get to use your primary language. And she was like, oh, that's something that I will do and I will look at. And she had no idea. And that's what I mean is that like that's a growing skill. Like they're growing in demand. People are asking for people who speak Spanish and other languages to be translators at any business, whether it's hospitals, right, or any kind of, especially government services or any of the, we need people who can translate. That doesn't require a 4-year college degree. So what I do is I listen to students, I pay attention to their interests. One of my other students, he went to college, but the book exposed him to video game design. It was something he previously had not thought of. And so I will say the biggest success story from the book is the exposure to, okay, if this is what you're interested in, do you know these jobs are available whether you go to a 4-year or not? And the other success that comes from the book is people understanding expenses that parents don't often tell them about, right? Like the parents don't tell their students, like, this is how much I pay on rent, or like, you, okay, we're gonna take the car, but like, this is car insurance and this is the gas and this is things. So a big piece of success is students willing to ask those questions to their parents about, well, how much would it really cost for me to be on my own? So there is the discovery of new opportunities, but there's also the recognition of self-sufficiency is money. And understanding, well, how much do I need to make so that I can be on my own one day, even though this generation is going to be with their parents till they're 30, which is not a shady thing. I'm not saying that shady. I'm saying that as like cost is wild. And we'll blame the boomers.
Well, housing, oh my gosh, that's a whole nother show.
Yes,
Wow. Like
yes.
it's so the affordability is just something else. But speaking of your book, I Don't Have to Go to College. This is the book she wrote. Tell people where they can find your book as we're wrapping up here.
Yes, you can find I Don't Have to Go to College, Discover Well-Paying Jobs That Don't Require a 4-Year College Degree Across 8 Industries on Amazon. So type in Larice Brown and I Don't Have to Go to College and it'll pop up for you.
Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful pleasure. I tell you, I wish we had more time because I feel like we were just at the tip of the iceberg here, but we did cover quite a bit. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Oh, it was wonderful. I appreciate you having me on. Your good energy and questions. I'm grateful, and I hope I'm confident more great things will come from this conversation. So thank you.
Absolutely. We'll have to follow up and do this again as some of these changes are taking place. So we'll definitely see you along the roadway there. So that's all the time we do have for today's episode of the Celeste Stein Show. We hope our discussion has given you valuable insights to help you make an informed decision. A big thank you to our special guest again, Larice Brown, for sharing her expertise and wisdom. And don't forget to please go check out and get a copy of her book, I Don't Have to Go to College, for more in-depth information. Join us next time as I continue to try to bring you conversations that matter. Until then, stay curious and stay informed. If you missed any part of today's show or you want to hear more, visit our YouTube channel under the Celeste Stein Show hashtag and subscribe for updates. You can also catch all of our episodes on bbsradio.com. Thanks for tuning in. Take care. We'll see you next time. I'm Dr. Celeste Stein on the Celeste Stein Show. Bye-bye.